Welcome to Enneagram with JB, a podcast about Enneagram personalities, where you'll uncover and discover more about yourself and others through the helpful tool of the Enneagram. I'm your host, Julie Underwood. Hi, Jackie. I'm so excited about today.
I am too.
Today, we are talking about chasing dreams with Corey from Red Rocks Worship. Hey, Corey.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
So nice to meet you.
It's great to meet you guys. Well, I know Jackie, but it's great to meet you. And wow, an honor to be here.
This will be really fun. Corey, tell us a little bit about yourself. Obviously, you work with Red Rocks Worship, but give us a little bio.
Yeah. So I live in Denver, Colorado. I work at a church, Red Rocks Church here, and lead worship, write songs, just having a good time up in the mountains.
It's dreamy there.
Dreamy. It is honestly, specifically this morning. So we're like in August. It's 64 degrees outside and a little bit overcast. It's a dream. I had a cup of hot tea this morning. It was perfect.
All right, Corey, we'd love to ask you a couple questions so our audience can get to know you better. Are you cool with that?
I'm ready. Let's go.
Okay. What is your favorite kind of food?
I love any type of Asian cuisine. So it could be sushi or pho or bao buns or Thai, like all of it. Give me all of it.
All right. If you went to a theme park, what would be your first ride?
The fastest, most potentially life-ending roller coaster there is.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Sign me up. I'll ride it over and over. Well, true story. We went to Universal Studios probably 2 years ago, and it was the day they opened, or it wasn't even open. It was, they were testing it, the Velociraptor, and it goes like zero to something in like 1.something seconds. And I'm not kidding you. I stayed in line. Everyone was having a great time. I ditched all of my friends, made friends in the line, and just sat in that line all day long. I rode it 4 times. It was so fun.
All right. So the most important question, Corey, what is your Enneagram type?
I'm a 7.
Yes.
Man, it took a lot of work to get there.
Yeah.
I'm a 7.
What did you think you were?
I thought I was a 4 for so long.
Oh, okay. Those are really different.
Well, they are and they aren't. There's some similarities between the 4 and the 7 around this need for nurture and this feeling of frustration. And so sometimes it can be masked in some different ways. And 4s are really, really creative, but so are 7s. And 7s, that piece doesn't get talked about very much, I don't think, for the 7 around creativity. But 7s are very entrepreneurial, very creative. Dream chasers or dreamers. I don't, you know, whatever. Or, you know, maybe dream killers, like Julie likes to say sometimes, but
I'm a little practical,
but yeah, so there is some similarities. You don't see them oftentimes mistyped, but every now and then, especially in this creative world, it's probably easier to lean, like to believe that you'd be a 4. But when we start to look at the motivation behind why we're doing what we're doing, that usually gives us a different picture.
I find I can't access the emotions like a 4 can. They make really good songwriters, artists. They can just access deeper things than I can. I'm a practical creative. I can look at a space and creatively organize it or creatively design it, but it's very practical. It's not emotional at all.
Let me ask you this question. This is not on our little notes that this is not on our notes. This is not something that I prepped Corey on.
This is spontaneous. I love it.
Because that 4 and that 7 motivation is different. So the Enneagram 4, they want to know that they're seen as their unique self. They want to be accepted as their unique self. And so that, you know, that is an aspect of the 4 and why they do what they do, right? But when it came to the 7 and the work around the 7, they want to know that they're going to be taken care of at an emotional level. And so when we really started to dig through some of that stuff, you know, what do you think about that, Corey, on that emotional level? Like, I want to know that I'm like somebody sees me as worthy of loving. I want to know that somebody sees me as worthy of being cared for. That they're like turning to pay some attention towards me, because the 7 often learned that if you are okay, I will figure out how to be okay.
I mean, I think that was one of the more major things that helped me get to like properly identifying my type. It, for me, you know, finding out that a four would so want to keep individuality and the motivation of like, I need to be unique. I need, like, it's beautiful. My whole life, I was like, I felt so different from everybody else that I felt lonely and I felt so excluded. And so a huge motivator for me from childhood, and even to this day, I can still find traces of it, was I just want to be one of you. So what's different about me? What's wrong? And so the unhealth side of the seven, or like going to that one, like the black and white and the justice and like, oh, you don't understand me. And that's your fault. It's, you know, like definitely going to the more immature side. Like I wanted so badly to be, to have a tribe and to have like a wolf pack. I didn't want to be alone, but I found myself alone a lot. So to me, that was like one of the more helpful pieces to understanding, like, oh, that's kind of the root of some of this angst of like socially, like, oh, please let me be part of your inner circle. Please. I want people to have my back too. And I promise I'll have yours.
That's really beautiful. Yeah. It's, well, I say that because it's like the vulnerable side of a seven, because sevens are so resilient and long suffering, you know. They're going to be fine. They'll figure it out. We'll be okay. And they'll be funny and joke and make things, you know, light. But then a lot of the times they go home and they don't feel light and they second guess what they said, or they don't feel fully known. And so some of those deeper parts. So
I resonate with that for sure, Corey, for sure. I feel like, you know, there's a lot of talk about like your tribe, your girls, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't have that. I don't think I ever did. I always had like a couple like close friends, but yeah, I don't know. And if I did, it was like a season and then that season would be gone. But like, I don't have people that like I grew up, I mean, cousins, people who are related to me, but that like, you know, college or things like that. Like, it's just kind of interesting. I have some friends that I've kept in touch with, but yeah, I've always felt like on the outside of that. And I don't know why. And I'm like, I'm a really good friend, but I don't even necessarily think it's because people don't want you around. I think we project that image of like, we're fine. Like, we're good. And I always tell people, I'm like, I'm your friend until you tell me we're not friends. Like, I'm not the kind of person that's going to hold a grudge or whatever, but I think I just kind of let people live and like do their thing and don't, I really try not to be needy. So I think, you know, you kind of get left on the wayside. I think you have to be needy sometimes. And I don't need it. I'm like, I don't need anything. I'm fine.
This is probably the first time in my life that I can say like, I think I found a tribe. I think I found people that really, really know me. And it took, man, it take so much to be vulnerable. Cause you know, when you go into that vulnerable place of saying like, this is who I really am. And this is what I really, really struggle with. This is what I really like. This is what I'm terrified of. There's like, you run the risk of losing what you're most after, right? Like, you run the risk of being like, ooh, after this, you may not want to be my tribe, you know? But this is the first time in my life that I can say that I have a tribe. And the interesting thing is, even while I'm in it, my mind is playing tricks on me every now and then of like, oh, they're about to leave. They're about to leave. And so thankfully I have two of my best friends are a nine and an eight. And so the nine is like, oh, no, what, like, no, dude, I'm like lifer. Let's go. And the eight is beautifully honest. Just like, hey, like the truth is, if something was weird or something was off or something was, I was offended or frustrated, you would have known about it the moment it happened. So you don't have to assume, you don't have to worry, you don't have to think, like, we're good.
I love that you have a tribe. I think it takes time. I think, you know, a lot of us, it takes time. And I do think you're right with that seven, that, you know, the seven needed more nurture than that was given early on. And it doesn't mean a bad parent, neglectful parent. It doesn't mean those things necessarily. Some of it's just like, I didn't necessarily get what I needed because they were also dealing with their own stuff in adulthood. And, you know, we're all adults, so we understand maybe some truth to that, right? And so I think for sevens, it's hard for us to be vulnerable because we were never able to be vulnerable when we were little. We had to figure it out on our own. So that resilience, and like my girlfriend, we were in a incredibly difficult season. One of my kids had just had surgery. This was years ago. And she sat across the table from me and she said, "I love you. I consider us good friends, but you don't let me into anything until you've already processed it." And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know how to let anybody into the unprocessed parts of my life because I always had to figure it out. And so that is one piece that I feel like I'm still actively trying to learn how to do, is to let people in. Just like you said, Julie, I don't want to be the needy one. And then when I am vulnerable and I feel like I am needy, then I feel like shame. I feel like a blanket of shame, like I'm the problem, and you know, now they probably think this about me, or I really am this. Yeah. Do you guys resonate?
For sure. But that is so true. The whole, you don't let people into the process. You have to process first. I mean, I struggle with that with my husband. He's like, "What's going on with you?" I'm like, "Nothing, nothing." And then like 3 nights later, I'm like, "Ah." And he's like, "You could have just told me." I'm like, I had to work through it in my head first. I had to make it make sense. And then I can tell you. So that was interesting. I hadn't heard it really said like that.
Okay. So I am super excited to have you on this podcast today to talk about chasing dreams and to, you know, to talk about, are you a dream chaser or are you a dreamer, or, you know what I mean? Cause I think that there's some differences to what that actually looks like. I also love that we're all sevens on this podcast. So it's kind of like this upbeat fun, but we're getting into the emotional side of it, right? We're all being vulnerable.
Nitty gritty.
Yeah. And even sharing some of the parts that sevens don't often talk about. But have you always been a dreamer, Corey?
I think I always have about 11 things in the fire at one time. I have found though that in my life, it so far has worked out, but I often just like, I'm like, what's going to be the best? And I go after it with everything I have. So in that sense, I would say like, yes, I think I'm a dream chaser, but I don't think it through. I don't have like, some people are like, here's my dream. And it's like almost a one sheet, really defined set of goals. And I'm like, that's going to be so fun. I think it's going to be the best. And I'm not going to stop until it is the best. So I somewhere in the middle of like a dreamer, dream chaser and a dreamer, I guess, has been my life. You know, this is a really great example of this, but when I was younger, I was 15 years old and, I'm an identical twin, and we weren't close growing up. You know, you had your stories of like twins that were like inseparable, and people would be like, "Oh my gosh, when they get hurt, do you feel it?" Like this like supernatural experience that I just did not experience. We're closer now than we've ever been, and we live, you know, 6 states apart. But when I was 15, I was raised in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I was kind of on a farm in the suburbs. It was kind of a weird thing, but I so wanted to get out. I was just always thinking like, where could I move? I was going to move to Ireland from like second grade to 15 years old. I just loved it and wanted to get out. And then at 15, my mom remarried, and her husband was from a town that was probably an hour north of where I was from. So they got married, and the week after they got married, we had like 2 weeks before the school year started. And so I'm a junior in high school, and I decided, hey, I'm going to go to high school in the hometown that my new stepdad is from. I don't know anybody there. And why did my mom let me do this? I do not know, but I talked my way, convinced my way into letting her let me move in with my brand new step grandma who I'd never met. And literally in the span of 2 weeks, moved there alone, can't drive, like moved there alone and went to this new high school. And I loved it. It was so fun. So those kind of things where I'm like, I don't know, who knows, but I'm going to do it. Let's go.
Was that like you wanted to present like a new identity? Like you were trying to have a fresh start or just an adventure?
I don't think that I had thought that through. You know, I definitely did. Like I was not, I was super not popular in high school, especially in my original high school. But when I got to this new high school, I decided, like I looked around, I was like, no one knows me. No one has history of me. I can be whoever I want to be. So in my old high school, I was like very involved with choir and band and just like, you know, that's all I did. And then I moved to this new high school. I'm like, I'm going to join the baseball team. I don't know. Who cares? I'm going to be a sports guy now. And so I kind of just like changed everything about myself. But I don't think that I went in thinking like, oh, I'm going to rewrite my personality here, you know?
Yeah, I think the seven personality type, they long to be known, you know, in a way that's different from the other numbers. But like that whole like a new identity, a new grandma, maybe there was comfort inside of that. Maybe, you know what I mean? I don't know. But that's interesting. That's really interesting. So you're spontaneous for sure. Adventurous, absolutely. You don't mind a little chaos.
Yeah.
Do you kick up chaos?
Maybe I'm so unaware. And like, talk to me in 10 years. Let's redo this in 10 years.
Yeah.
And I might laugh at my answer now, but I don't think I like to kick up chaos. Mm-mm. I strive for people to be at peace. Like if there were 100 people in a room and all 100 people loved each other, it's heaven to me. I love it.
Yes. I think that that's right on for the seven. And I think we should talk about it just for a second, because I don't think that that's what people think about sevens. I think that they think that we want to kick up chaos, that we're chasing all the wild, crazy dreams. Sometimes we are, you know, maybe we don't always have it mapped out and planned out. But what I do know about sevens is that sevens desire to control the chaos. They want to control it because they have lived in it. They have lived in it. They're used to it. They don't typically like it. And so they want to quiet the chaos because the chaos makes them scared. It makes them anxious. It makes them fearful of the unknown and the unexpected. As human beings, we function best when there's predictability. We function best when we know what to expect. We function best in boring. And all of us are sevens, so we don't like to hear that. But the reality is when there is a predictable pattern and routine in our lives, we function best because we are not so heightened.
All right, Corey. So do you consider yourself more of a dreamer or a dream chaser? And do you kind of feel like there is a difference in your head?
Like when I think about it, there is a difference. The problem is I don't think about it like when it's happening. I would say, yeah, I think I'm a dream chaser. But they never take form. Like they're never like set goals. They're just kind of ambiguous, you know?
So we're going to work
on
that.
Yeah. But Jackie is currently helping me work on that.
That is so true. I've never had goals. I think the biggest goal I had that I've continued is like having kids and raising them. And it's just because it's too hard to like not do it. Like I don't really have a choice. And marriage, like I'm still here. But yeah, I feel the exact same way. People be like, what are your goals? And that is a very overwhelming question. I hate that question. I'm like, I don't know. Like to raise good people, I don't know. I don't really have personal goals. But I have dreams, but they need to be attainable for me. Like if they're like too big, like I have a lot of friends who like to look at model homes or like they like to like look on realtor.com. I hate that. I'm like, why would I look at $1 million house if I can't buy $1 million house? Like, that's so boring. Or window shopping. Like, that sounds like a punishment. Like, I'll take you window shopping. I'm like, why? Why would you do that to me? Like, give me $100 or don't. Like, what's the point? So I feel like there is a difference between dream chasing and being a dreamer. Dreamers are the people who are looking at the $1 million house, right? And the dream chaser, if you're going to chase something, like, there has to be, like, a way to get it, right? If you're chasing something, you have a goal, like you're trying to get it.
I think there's definitely a difference between that dream chaser and just being a dreamer. And I do think the seven can get stuck in dreamer. Like you said, Corey, like there's like 11 things that you're working on at one time. And then you're going to get like, you got to get like really intentional about one thing to be able to chase that thing to completion. When the seven is not in the healthiest place of their personality, they don't finish what they start. There is not a completion to it. So the goal around this type of even growth work is like, hey, we're going to finish what we start, which means that we're going to have to take this dream and we're going to make it chaseable by putting some, you know, I always think of bullseyes, like what is the target? What do you want to accomplish? And you're doing that right now in some major ways in your life around worship music and writing songs and putting stuff out into the world. So talk about that. Cause you are taking the dream, you are chasing the dream, and there's deadlines that you have to meet.
Yeah.
So even though you might think, I don't have a plan, what has happened is that people around you have crafted a plan for you to help you make this thing happen. And you guys, sevens, we need help. We need teams. We need people. We need cheerleaders and encouragers to help us complete the task. So talk to us about that a little bit. You've got some great music coming out. You've got some great music out and then some great stuff you're working on. Talk to us about that dream chasing.
You said it perfectly. I think it's taken a touch of maturity and also it's taken like absolutely. I had to make a decision. Am I going to be mature or not? Am I going to take this seriously or not? For so long, songwriting was a hobby. And even though I got paid for it, worship leading was a hobby. And it was safer to think of it as that, you know, where it was like, oh, this is still so fun to me. This is still so life-giving. And for whatever reason, before I did take it seriously, worship leading and songwriting, it felt like if I were to put them in a spot in my life where it was a serious goal, where I was seriously chasing after it, I was afraid that the life-giving part of it would be taken away. And I don't think I knew that, but just internally, like the subconscious side of me thinking like, oh, I'm just, you know, people would be like, I love that new song you wrote. And I'd be like, oh, thanks, man. It just like came together. And like, I meant it in a way that's like it was fun. It really was. It was, I loved being in the writing room. I loved, you know, but I remember, sorry, this is a bit of a tangent, but it feels important. One of my favorite places to go on the earth is Laguna Beach, California. I don't know why, but it feels like it's just like the thinnest veil between me and whatever, like Spirit of God, creativity, Holy Spirit, just, it feels like there's nothing in between. And so every time I go there, I'm like flooded with creative ideas and songs and melodies. And so I went, this was in 2021. I went there and I got in the water. I, for whatever reason, when I get there, my internal clock just changes. I wake up before the dawn, which never happens at home. But I wake up before the dawn. I like walk the beach with my cup of tea and I'm like, I'm so artistic. It's crazy. So this morning I was in my trunks with a hot cup of tea walking around the beach. And I felt an invitation from the Lord to go and get in the water. And it was, you know, November in the Pacific. So it's like cold, cold water. But I was like, cool, let's do it. Set my cup of tea down. I got in the water and I'm just floating there. And I remember feeling like the Lord was speaking to me and just saying like, hey, I've given you these gifts and I put you in a position to where you could actually build something important, but you haven't taken it seriously and you haven't stewarded it. So can you please steward it and can you please take it seriously? It was an absolute challenge from the Lord. encouragement in the same hand. And so from that moment, I was like, you know what? I'm going to actually really take this seriously. And I think, you know, the maturity side, where that felt like a tangent, I think one of the things that's felt like the biggest lesson in my life is I could take this seriously all day long until I'm blue in the face and can work as hard as I can. But my natural giftings are not order and logistics and deadlines. Like they just aren't. I'd have to borrow from my creative ability and steal from that in order to be like mediocre at this, you know? And so I had to surround myself with people that, like, one of my like closest friends and colleagues here at Red Rocks Worship, is his name is Tyler, and he is an order guy. He is a detail guy. He does a great job, and I think it actually gives him life to have things to do. So we've kind of found ourselves in a really great place where he gets to create order and move the ball forward and be thinking about what's coming next. And I get to be in a spot where I'm like, oh, okay, we have 12 songs to write. What could we possibly write about? Like, let me go to a coffee shop for 6 months. Let me just sit and listen to the Lord and read my word and like get inspired. And so I hope I'm answering your question, Jackie. I wish I could go back to, like, you know, 20-year-old Corey and be like, hey, find the people in your life that can cover where you are not gifted in, you know?
I think it, like, find the people. And I think there's a level and a layer of trust for the seven. That it's not just find the people. It's like learn how to have relationships that are vulnerable with the right people, and that, you know, surround yourselves with people that celebrate you and not tolerate you. I think for sevens, we want to be part of something. And so sometimes we're moving into different groups, trying to figure it out. And sometimes we can end up finding ourselves in places that we're tolerated, you know, like people think that we're fun and funny and all the things, but they're not calling out the gifts inside of us. They're not calling out the depth of who we are. And so it's when we surround ourselves with people that see the depth of who we are and begin to call it out, I think that's where change really, really begins to occur. Because when we feel celebrated, we're going to live up to that expectation. And a lot of us as sevens are looking for somebody to look at us and want to celebrate us. Because for some reason or other, early on in our story, that's not always how we felt about ourselves. You know, we felt tolerated or in the way, maybe. You know, my story, my dad left when I was little. And so there's some abandonment, like never good enough. So, you know, I think everybody has different stories around what that looks like. But I do think the beauty in chasing dreams has to do with the structure and order that comes around it. And if you're not naturally gifted in this, then who can champion you and help you in that growth?
What is something you've overcome or are currently overcoming to do what you're doing today?
This is probably like a very like human journey to go through in any profession or in any sphere. It's, you know, for me, my circumstances really, really play into this, where I found myself in scenarios growing up where I was always underqualified, is how it felt. So I'll say it like this. When I got really serious about my faith and about what I wanted to do with my life, I got really involved at a church. Well, at this church, you know, it was a fourth generation pastor, his father, their father, you know? And I so badly wanted to be liked by this guy. I also didn't grow up with a father. And so I looked at him as a young Corey and was like, oh, will you father me? Almost, not even knowing how to ask that. But because of where I came from and because of my background, I think I was discredited, you know. I think what I felt, maybe it wasn't as like much as I remember it, but what it felt like, I was discredited for my lack of proximity with ministry people or being raised as a Christian. And, you know, so that I had that experience. And I went right to Bible college, where once again, I had been saved for like a couple years, and all the students there were like, well, my dad's a missionary, my dad's a pastor, my mom's a, you know, fill in the blank. They're all very used to the ministry world. And then I find myself like, I lack all of those experiences. I lack all of the like upbringing advice and tools to like speak your language, but yet you're asking me to be a worship leader now. So now I'm in front of all of the people that I feel underqualified to lead. And then, you know, I moved to Denver, and I'm working at this church where it's like, it's bigger, and my face is on a screen now, and my voice is amplified through a PA, and like all of those experiences just got heightened. And meanwhile, they're like, oh, also, can you write songs for our mega church to sing? No pressure, have fun. And so I think for me, something that I've had to work through and even still am working through is this feeling of being unwanted, or that my voice lacks, that I lack wisdom or experience to actually have a voice, which feels crushing, you know, when you're like, I can't control how I was raised. I can't control where I came from. I love my family also, by the way. I'm not even going to say sorry for them, because I love them. But I think that feeling of, and it is a feeling, what is what I've realized. There's some people who are just like bound and determined to be little dirtbags. But for the most part, it's a feeling that is projected onto other people, of thinking like, oh, you are going to invalidate what I'm about to think and say. And so I'm not going to try and think and say it. So in a songwriting room specifically, you know, I have found that in order to feel proud of something that you've created and to be excited to share it with the world as like a shared piece of art, everybody has to leave the room feeling like they were honest and vulnerable. And what that takes is being in a room thinking, oh, I'm underqualified. I'm in a room with Mia Fields, who is like one of the best songwriters. Like, why would she ever want to hear my opinion of a lyric? It just takes vulnerability to be like, oh, I actually believe in what I carry, and I believe in my experience in life. I know what I know, and I'm going to share it. I'm going to be honest. So I think it takes on different forms, but yeah.
I think you summed that up how a lot, I mean, I'm like holding back tears. Because I think a lot of us sevens feel this way, and we put on smiley faces, upbeat personalities, you know, we're going to, you know, conquer the world and do all the things. And we look so capable, but underneath the surface is this scared little person, right? That's like, man, I don't feel like I belong here, or I'm afraid they're going to think I don't belong here, or whatever this is. So I think that you just described really beautifully what a lot of us are battling in our own minds every time that we take a step out of faith and start to move towards something that we really believe that God has purpose in for us. It's so scary.
A little bit of that imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
I feel like.
Yeah.
I feel you. I did hair for a long time. I still do a little bit on the side, but every time someone would show up in my chair, I'm like, do they know I don't know what I'm doing? Like, why do they keep coming back? You know, or even with like a kid, you wake up and you're like, dude, they don't know I don't know what I'm doing, and I'm not doing a very good job. And, you know, like, yes, I 100% have felt that in so many ways. But at the same time, I feel like sevens have a confidence about them that whether it's false or not, nobody knows it's false. And so I've been driving before, and my friends would just be following me, and they're like, where are we going? I'm like, I don't know. I thought you knew where we were going. And they're like, no, you look like you knew where you were going. I'm like, I have no idea where we're going.
That happens every single time I'm walking, like in a new city with Red Rocks Worship. When we go out to a new city, we'll be walking and I will make the most confident stride towards nothing. And everyone's following me and they're like, Corey, do you know where we're going? And I'm like, not even a chance. I'm just walking. And you sheep were following.
Okay. Let me ask you this question. What is a piece of Enneagram awareness that has been both hard to hear about yourself and also freeing as a seven? I'll give you a little idea of kind of where I'm going with this question. So like when I first started to learn about myself as a seven, the words frantic escapism were part of the seven. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is me. I definitely feel like this. It is in the lower levels of health where I was like, oh, this is true about me. And it also felt freeing because I was like, this is true about me, but only when I'm not healthy. So I don't have to believe the lie that I'm just a mess all the time. I can understand like when I get to this level, something is off track and I have not addressed whatever has gotten me to this place, but I don't have to live there anymore. So is there anything for you that was like eye-opening, kind of like, ooh, and also freeing?
I wish the question was, do you have six things? because there's yes. been so many. I think that one of the things that's been the hardest to think through, and like I'll still need to process it, but also freeing is, you know, I would think about, in my limited understanding, when I would think about sevens, what made it hard to land there for me was, I'm a little moody. I just am. I feel like mm-hmm. some sevens I talk to, they're like, I don't even know what I'm feeling. And, I used to think I did. I used to think I'm like, I know what I'm feeling. So that means that I'm not a seven. And one of the things that I feel was really freeing at first and then like brain breaking was that sevens think their feelings.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to lie to you. The first time I heard that, I was like, everybody does that. Like, what do you mean? Like everybody thinks like a feeling is a thought, right? And then getting to the reality of like, it was really hard to process, but so freeing to be like, oh man, there is a way, because I can see it in a few people that I know. There is a way where every thought doesn't get to have the same weight. Like I get to decide which one deserves more of my mental energy. That kind of changed the game for me, because I'm like, I'm sitting again. Let's just use what I had just said before as an example. I'm sitting in a writing room. I'm feeling little, and I'm feeling invalid. Well, maturity and also past experience would say otherwise, that I actually do have a valid voice, and I do have a reason to be confident in this area. So getting to like actually put those two thoughts on the same plate and saying like, I'm not going to eat this, I'm going to eat this. That has been huge for me.
That take every thought captive, you know? And so, yeah. Yeah. Do you resonate with that, Julie?
Yes, I think so. The part where it was like, you think your feelings, I think my feelings. I am learning to feel my feelings, but I absolutely think them much longer than I feel them. But yeah, trying to decide which ones are worth my energy, which ones aren't, you know, and I think that's where the thinking part comes. Like you're trying to, every Enneagram number preserves energy somehow. And I think that's how sevens preserve their energy, is they think through what's worth their effort.
Well, if they can keep it, if you can keep it in your head, it doesn't have to penetrate your heart. Okay. So like that 18 inches from head to heart is the hardest work any of us will ever do. But if you understand that you have to feel it to heal it, you have to get what's happening up here into heart and do hard heart work. And so that work is that four part, right? That's like that deep feeler getting into that place. But you know, the beginning is like, you've got to name it to tame it. So naming the thoughts that are running away. Okay, let's name it. Okay, so let's make sense of it. And then we're going to take it into our feeling side so that what do we need to heal inside of this? What is broken? What is causing the pain that we don't want to feel? And, you know, sevens get busy. We get busy in our head, but we also get busy in doing to distract us so we don't have to feel it. We'll just go into movement. Go, 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 go. Noise, you know what I mean? Whatever it is. So I don't have to feel it. So that hard, hard work is, it's worth the work, and it takes time, and it's a lifetime of healing. I think everybody needs to know that. It's not a one and done. It is like stepping into your own story and starting to pay attention to those healing places.
Well, to round us out, Corey, I've got kind of a question that kind of talks about dreaming, but what are you dreaming about right now?
It feels like I'm on a constant dream cycle with Red Rocks Worship, because the second that a project releases, we're already thinking about the next one. So currently working on, we're about to hop into a writing season for writing songs, and I'm really excited about that. I'm also about to, in a few months, record my first solo worship project. That we just wrapped the songwriting for that side of things last week. So now I have, as we talked earlier, surrounded myself with people who are good with details. And so now that the creative side is wrapped on that, we now get to just imagine and dream. Like, what could the night of worship look like? And so I'm drowning in music, basically. And it's a dream. It's dreamy.
I love it. You're chasing it. You're chasing all your dreams.
I love that. Well, Corey, thank you so much for sharing your story with us and being here with us today. That was really vulnerable. And I think we would have expected it to be like more loud and crazy, but this was like a vulnerable seven.
Yeah, this podcast. Was... We're in touch, man. Come on.
Yeah. Sorry, we're all like really deep in our journey.
Guys, thank you so much for having me. For real. What an honor.
And thank you for joining us today. Join us next time as we continue our conversation about the Enneagram and what it means for your relationships. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single episode. And while you're there, we'd love for you to leave a review. Your kind words help others find the show. For more great Enneagram content, resources, and individual coaching, you can visit enneagramwithjb.com. And while you're there, make sure to order Jackie's newest book, The Enneagram and Your Marriage. We'll see you next time on Enneagram with JB.